Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Today we have quite a treat for you. We have political activist and consultant and the person who knows the most about New Jersey politics that I know, Paul Danielchek. This is purely a political show tonight, so if you are sensitive, if you have not recovered from the political situation that we're in, and easily to anger, this is probably not the show for you. So, I want to thank Paul for spending some time with us, and I look forward to checking in with him periodically as the political season progresses. Tonight, we have a special guest on Safety Wars, a guy that I've known for, what is it, about 25 years now, Paul?
At least.
At least, right? A local guy from Woodbridge, New Jersey. That's Woodbridge Township, New Jersey. Paul Danielchek, president of New Jersey Conservative GOP. Here's a little biographical information on Paul. Paul ran for Congress in 1990 against the establishment Congressman Vernie Dwyer and lost by only 5,500 votes and on a $9,000 campaign budget, which in New Jersey at the time in 1990, just to give you a note, that what was the price of a first class stamp? About 29 cents, something like that back in the day. And that means that there wasn't money in the budget to do mass mailings. So he went out and hand delivered everything door to door. So he put Paul in the top five of NRCC's biggest gaffes. That's National Republican Campaign Committee's biggest gaffes, where what happens is the campaign committee is the one, they're the ones who decide where all the money goes from the main party, the Republican Party in this case, and they make mistakes. We'll leave it at that. They have made mistakes for a long time. He founded the New Jersey Conservative GOP in 1992, which is a group within the GOP or within the Republican Party. Maybe it's separate. Not sure exactly how that's set up. Maybe Paul will let us know. He's also been on several programs. Now he can add Safety Wars to his repertoire. He was on, what was this? You had your own show, The Other Side.
Yes, cable.
Interviewed nationally known political figures, Rush Limbaugh, Bob Grant, Mayor Koch, Principal Joe Clark from the movie Stand By Me, and several others. Am I correct on that? Joe Clark,
yes.
Stand By Me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to ask you to sing the song, all right? Which I'm sure you could. He was a fill-in host at WCTC, which is a local talk show that used to host talk shows out of New Brunswick, I believe it was, New Jersey. And he was a guest on many different radio and TV talk shows. And Paul has been a conservative voice in the Republican Party since 1972 and has spoken to various Republican and conservative organizations. And that's basically it with Paul, but we know some other things about Paul. Paul was one of the wedding singer at my wedding. He plays Elvis, and you also sing a couple of other songs outside of your Elvis repertoire, correct?
Yeah, excuse me, but Elvis is my ace in the hole. That's what I've been doing since I'm 3.5 years old. That and politics are my two loves.
Absolutely. And you are also a New Jersey licensed real estate broker, I guess that is, in the state of New Jersey. So that's what he does. And then he does Elvis. I tell you what, we had one little girl at our wedding, Samantha, who's now a senior. She was, I think, 3 years old, 4 years old. Now she's a senior in high school. And I saw her for Christmas, and she says, and I asked her, does she still listen to Elvis? And she's like, yeah. Her mom is like, she's like the only person of her age group that probably listens to Elvis here. Unfortunately, as years have gone by, I've appreciated Elvis more and more, partly because of you. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Paul, we're here to talk. So recently we decided to, on this show, delve into politics.
Right.
Where I've gotten involved in politics starting in January of 2000, with the presidential race in 2000. And I was actively involved in local stuff in Woodbridge and Middlesex County up until spring of 2011, where I got married, moved away, this sort of thing. But I'm still, I have family in New Jersey, and I have a lot of business in New Jersey and everything else, so I've kept up with things, obviously. And in what's the word I'm looking for? And you have to be, you're on a 4 year cycle with politics. And this is, I'm not telling anybody, people don't already know. The first year, and you may disagree with me on this, but the first year is, you have a presidential election like we just had. And then it's year one after the presidential election, which we're in, you try to spread the message and recruit people, maybe register voters. And then the second year you do the same thing and you may field some candidates. And you get the feel in there and you're still educating people. And then the third year, you figure out what you had, what went wrong, who you could rely on from year two, running campaigns, develop some more people in there, continue to educate. Then the fourth year is get out the vote. Now that you've educated people over the last, and recruited people over the previous 3 years, fourth year, you go out, get out the vote, run candidates, and you go hog wild into the whole thing. The situation in New Jersey, and I believe it's Kentucky and Virginia. I'm not sure in Kentucky.
Yeah, Virginia and New Jersey, not Kentucky.
Not Kentucky. All right. They have statewide elections on off years. So this year we have a statewide election in New Jersey and Virginia, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're like a little bit off in these states. And you end up having like constantly doing everything all the time because of that thing. And basically, Paul is in the education business, educating the voters and everything else, just like what we're trying to do here on Safety Words in hour two. So I've done enough talking. So Paul, I'm going to turn it over to you. How did you get involved in all of this?
Well, I guess it might have been the influence of my father. He had a very keen knowledge about politics. And that was before CNN and all these other programs, the news talk show. And we would watch like NBC or some kind of, the regular standard news. And he could see through all the clutter and point out how wrong they were and the true conservative value of what they were talking about. Excuse me, I got a little throat today. And I guess he was the biggest influence on me because he could tell me things that I couldn't find anywhere else.
Right.
He was able to cut through the nonsense of the media and give me the correct side. So that probably put the bug in me. And then being the type of performer I am, there's not much difference between acting and politics. And they're the ones that can do both. They're the more successful ones. So that's what put the bug in me. And I got involved in a lot of the local campaigns, the presidential campaigns. And then in 90, I decided to run myself. And I was known as a conservative firebrand. And I really didn't get the help that I needed in 1990, because I didn't fit their description. And so they bypassed, and I'll tell you that was the year, one of the best years for Republicans. And I had a great campaign manager named Jim Florio, and he made it very easy to go out there in public, and he just emasculated the state with taxes all over the place. And it was and people were revolting. I was had my show down at the taxpayer rallies in Trenton. The people were on fire, and I decided to run. I couldn't get no help, so you mentioned I went door to door. I wore out three pairs of shoes,
Yes.
and when the dust cleared, I lost by only 5,500 votes.
Now,
And
let
this
me
is
cut you
what.
off on this here, Stefan. Jim Florio, now your unofficial campaign manager, he was
Yes.
running for governor at the time,
He was the governor and he
and
made a mess.
it was like he had the state was in turmoil. Even he raised state taxes, state sales taxes, and no, with he
Every
had
tax under the sun,
the
about
toilet paper
104
tax.
of
He had a toilet paper tax.
them. Yes, that was never instituted before. He raised taxes 2.8 billion. He was an enemy of the Second Amendment, and people were on fire. Terrible judges. And it was the right time for Republicans, but I couldn't convince them because everywhere I went, the question they would ask me, not my position, they would say, "Are you Democrat or Republican?" I said, "Republican." They go, "Great, you got my vote." And that was in a heavy Democratic area. But when the dust cleared, I came up a little short when the graveyards of Lyndon and Roselle came in. I won Middlesex and Monmouth County, but when the graveyards of Lyndon and Union County came in, we lost it. In fact, I was declared by the winner of a radio station and a newspaper. They already thought I had won.
Right,
And
and that
boy,
was if you recall, this is the other thing, Florio free in 93.
yes.
That was the and later on that sort of
Yeah.
became.
And so it was grave disappointment. So what we did after that, not to lose all our people that were the grunts for my campaign, we decided to start the NJ Conservative GOP to keep everybody together. And we've been very active since then. Unfortunately, many of the members, like yourself, couldn't take Jersey anymore, and they left the state. And unfortunately, some passed away. But our numbers aren't what they used to be, but it's a solid group that speaks out. I'm involved in the screening committee in Middlesex County. We have known candidates come in and present themselves. So we're still a formidable organization. And we're keeping it going. In fact, myself, I'm looking forward to leave Jersey soon, as soon as my son-in-law gets his promotion. And it's not, Jim, it's not just the taxes. That's a big part of it. But it's the wokeness that happens in this state. The curriculums that they have in the public schools, the DEI in this state, religious liberties being clamped down on. It's just horrible. The illegal invaders are treated better than the legal citizens here in New Jersey. In fact, we just had the governor announce that he's going to hide an illegal. He has a little apartment above his garage there. And then they tried to retract it because people went wild. And they're going to be coming to his garage soon.
Yeah, it's it's kind of what it came what it come seems to come down to now. And I've no I've done a couple of really deep dives here with this is in 2020 and 2021. I in one in less than 6 months you had Senator Joe McCarthy, you had the John Birch Society, and you had a whole bunch of other people who were called crazy for over 60 years, proven right. As I
Yeah.
said, no, that was always, well, were there communists? I've always said, no, on this show too, the biggest threat we have is the resurgence of worldwide communism.
Disguised as socialism, which the people
Socialism.
like, AOC, Bernie Sanders, they're communists. They're not socialists.
It's just like Ayn Rand. I don't know how familiar you are with what she said. The difference between socialism and communism is that socialism is communism through the ballot box, and communism is communism through the ammunition box. Right?
I learned two major things in the election of 2021 here in New Jersey, and this last general countrywide election is the pollsters. I will not ever again believe what they're coming out with. In 2021, they had our candidate. That's the year we run our governor's race in the odd years. They day before the election, they announced that Jack Cittarelli was behind 7 points, which wasn't true. Actually, it was fairly neck and neck. But when they announced that he was behind 7 points, a lot of voters stayed home, including Republicans. And if they didn't give out that misinformation, the people that stayed home would have put Jack over. Now, forward to this last election, they had Trump and Kamala neck and neck in the toss-up states. Trump won them all. Now, the polls had them neck and neck. They had Jack Cittarelli down by 7. And this last election, I would talk to my cousin. He said, "Paul, I can't believe that it's just about even." I said, "I can't figure it out, guy. I usually can get a good pulse on this, but you got to remember one thing: there's people that hate Trump more than they love their country." But I was saying that based on what the polls were saying. But in the end, the people came out big for our President Trump. And I said, I'm never going to listen to them again, because I was telling people, according to the polls, what they're showing, I really can't get a read on it. Within my heart, I thought Trump would win big. So our hearts were right, and the pollsters were wrong. So twice they got me. And it's not going to happen the third time. They did it with Jack Cittarelli in 21. He lost by about not even 2 percentage points when they had him down by 7. And they had President Trump neck and neck with her when he won in the landslide. So your audience, be very wary about these pollsters.
So, no, Alan Keyes, right? Ambassador Keyes had said to me, and he wasn't the only one that said this, not original. If everybody who agreed with me, who said that I'll never win, would actually vote for me, I would have won.
But that was horrible. And
What I noticed when I was going door to door when I ran for assembly, as an independent conservative, was, and I think the Republican Party has this issue. I don't think you have this issue, but I think the Republican Party in general has this issue. They don't realize how much they're hated in a lot of areas of the country, in a lot of areas of even New Jersey, because of what you just said. The polls are biased. The political coverage is biased, and that's just coming out in the last 2 days with the whole Doge thing with Elon Musk, where major news outlets are on the dole of the USAID, that everybody's screaming and yelling about, and payments and grants and everything else going to news organizations over the last couple of years. Not even, we're talking tens of millions of dollars here. And you go door to door, and specifically, oh, well, I don't like the Republicans. I don't do blah, blah, blah. And well, why not? Well, this is what I heard on the news. But when you talk to them, they're like, yeah, I could agree with that. I could agree with that. I could agree with that. And I think that's one of the underappreciated things, especially in New Jersey, especially in the urban centers of New Jersey. We would be getting a lot more votes as Republicans or conservatives, whatever we're defining ourselves, if we went out there and engaged people face to face.
Yeah, and you know how bad it is, Jim. CBS, with the interview with Kamala Harris, they had to do so much editing just to make her sound plausible. And they're being sued about for doing that.
Yeah, they just released the complete interview this week.
It's a bunch of word salads. That shows how far the media is in for the Liberal Democrat Party. And it's horrible. And hopefully we can start stopping this. And now in 2025, it's popular now to be a Republican. The wind is at our backs. President Trump lost New Jersey by only 4 points when the people in New Jersey were told it write the state off. It's not going to happen. So it's incredible. And a lot of people are coming over to the party now. The Democrats are hysterics. If you just watched Schumer and Dirty Waters, what they're doing with their rallies, they're totally unhinged and they haven't got the lesson. They still won't talk about illegal invaders and many of the things that people talked about. They just know Republican bad, Democrats good. That's all they talk about. They haven't learned a thing. And they won't, because it's not in the fiber of their being. And President Trump ran such a great campaign that he's popular here in New Jersey.
Before well, he's a local here. He's a local. Let's not forget that.
Well, this state was always recently very slighted Democrat. But now, before you can wear a MAGA hat, now, when you wear a MAGA hat here in New Jersey, you go to the food market or whatever. Hey, Trump, good going. You know, people actually, you can wear these things in public now.
Well, I think the public put two and two together here. I mean, since 2015, it's been an unrelenting attack towards him. So for the last 10 years now, an unrelenting attack. Mm-hmm. And all these convictions, very, very little legal basis. With these convictions, with this, most likely overturned on appeal when all is said and done, the cases that he lost. And what happened is, I think people say if they could do it to someone like him with all these billions of dollars, and all that they could get out of this was, these things that they know are not don't stand up to scrutiny. Eventually, I believe. Not going to stand up to scrutiny. What can they do to me? I have no resources,
mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that did have something to play with this. It did with me, you know?
And also the big things, the people out there, the voters, it resonated what Trump was talking about because they were experiencing horrible things like pornographic curriculums, indoctrination of the kids in their schools, they call a thing called, they call us, see, I'm going to talk about, after I talk about this, about defining our Republicans. They said that we were book banners. They always come up with a sly type of thing to label us with. No Republican was against book banning. They were just supporting get the garbage out of the curriculum, out of the libraries. Put it in the adult section, whatever you want, but leave the kids the heck alone. And it's horrible. But they call us book banning. We're not book banners. We just want this crud removed from the kids in the schools, in their libraries. It's inappropriate. There was a state senator called, There was a state senator here named Gopal. He was supporting all this garbage. In the state legislature. And he wound up winning, and I'll tell you why, even though he was on the ropes. One thing the Republican Party has to learn, not to let the Democrat Party define us. We got to beat them to the punch so they don't call us book banners, so they don't call us election deniers and things like that. Now, Gopal, he supported all that garbage that was going on in the schools. They had him on the ropes in the last election. However, his opponent wouldn't take on some of these things that the people were upset about, the pornography in the schools, the religious liberties being attacked. So he wound up losing. I would tell, if I was that candidate running against Gopal, if you think these books are so innocent, tonight, when your young kids go to bed, read from those books that have all this garbage in it. But our party has a tendency to let the Democrats define us instead of us defining ourselves and defining them. That well, we're not, you know, and it's a problem.
You're absolutely correct. I think that's what Trump did. He did not let anyone define them. He went on the offensive with these folks. Yes. And that's what you need to do. You have to go on the offensive. You cannot be afraid. We talk about this all the time with in safety, where safety professionals do not they're not on the attack. That's the way I call it, the safety war. You have to have all your ducks in a row. You have to have everything ready ahead of time. Right. And you have to be able to describe things in a way that people understand. So I came up with a new graphic. You may see it on your computer screen here, Paul. Paul doesn't have his video on, but that's okay. I think you see this, where I came up with this idea that I spoke to a mutual acquaintance of ours, Murray Savern, about this years and years ago, where we had to make things very simple for people to understand here. And what I came up with, and you know, we have all different types of statistics put out by the government. One of them is, one department is called the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They publish on the 7th, the 7th of every month. It's the first week of every month, all of the statistics from the previous month on unemployment and worker participation and everything, thousands and thousands. But what they do is every month they put in average wages every month for the average person, and they're averaged out over the whole United States. So you could go and go deep and find out what your locale is. And what they determined was this, and it's updated every month. I came up with the idea of a man year, right? And that's the amount of income a person earns in a year on average. All right. So you have man hours and everything out there in the safety arena. This is man year. And as of December 2024, the last month we have data for, right? The weekly wages are $1,224.80. Are you seeing this graphic, Paul?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The annual wages is $63,689, which in New Jersey doesn't get you too far. All right. Really doesn't. Hours for your 2080. So to earn $1 million, and this is assuming where you have to go and all your wages goes to the government, which is what a lot of people want, believe it. I met people like that. They want all your wages. You have to work 15.7 years. Think about it. For $1 million, right? Or 15.7 people have to work for 1 year. Or just to to make up that $1 million. And if you look for $100 million, that's, right, 15,700 people have to work for 1 year for that. All right, now we have productivity coming into here. Wouldn't you rather be doing other things than working for the government here? We could carry this out to ridiculous amounts. Right now, I believe it's a $6 trillion budget that we have. Look at all the manpower we're losing here with that. And I think that people, maybe it may not catch on, but I think people can understand that. How much do you have to work to earn that money in there? It works very easy on the local level, too, with property taxes. How long do you have to work in a year to pay your taxes? I think the Tax Freedom Day is where you pay all your taxes for the year is somewhere in June now, maybe July.
It used to be in May, that every nickel, dime, penny, and stamp you earn has gone to taxes, local, national, county. And now you finally keep your money that you're making in June, and it gets bumped every year longer and longer where you're paying to the government. That's an outrage.
Yeah, now, no, I'm for helping the poor and everything else, and the truly indigent and the poor. I know I have people in my family, all different types of health problems and everything. They're on public assistance because they can't work physically or emotionally, cannot work. I get that. All right. And I think most people would understand that. When you have able-bodied people not working, I don't know what the percentage is, but that's the perception. And then you have numbers like this where you literally have to work years of your life here. At a certain point, there's a rebellion, and we're in the middle of one right now with everything.
And here in New Jersey, I mean, they roll out the red carpet for the illegal invaders, where they get food, they get medical, they get the education, they get a credit each year to each month to spend money, and the legal residents are breaking their back just to make ends meet. And that every state is a border state now, so that resonated in this past election. And this massive deportation is very, very popular. The people had enough of this. And the only ones that are balking about this are blue states. The red states are all in. They want these people out.
Well, the red states, right, mostly are lower income states too. They're not earning a lot of money. My daughter just asked me for something here. Sorry, honey, I don't have that here. All right.
Well, we have some good salaried peoples in Connecticut, New
Right.
Jersey, New York, and
But I mean, in the lower, in I'm sorry, Paul, the lower income, when you look at Republican states, these are not the highest income states. But the Democratic states are always, they're very, they're more affluent for a whole host of reasons. They're more affluent, so they could maybe afford to, they have the disposable income. I don't, but you don't, but they have the disposable income. Everything, they don't mind paying for this stuff. That ain't the way it is in the middle of the country. And as you know, I've worked all over the country. They have a different way of thinking of things. It's just the way it is, which is why we have an electoral college.
Well, the Lake and Riley Act was the first bill that President Trump signed.
Right.
And my two loggerhead senators were two of only 10 that voted against it. I mean, how crazy. All our Democrat Congress people, except one, voted against it. I mean, that's insane. That's insane. And that's how, why I keep saying the Democrat Party hasn't learned. They should have been preaching from the mountaintop about this Lincoln Riley bill, or as Biden called her, Lincoln Riley. They couldn't even get the name straight half the
Yeah,
time.
but hey, well, he couldn't get a lot of things straight. But where has he been in the last 2 weeks either? I haven't seen him.
Gone, and thank God.
But they're but it's along these things. It's I not, but the thing is that the Republicans have to realize there a lot of them are banking on the status quo here. I have a former neighbor. I will mention his name up in Chestnut Ridge, who was a economist, and he said once they realize that they're losing money, it doesn't matter whoever is in power. Once they change their tune a lot, otherwise they're going to continue to lose money. So I think once the Democrats, and it may take them 2 or 3 years to do this, need to once they figure out a strategy here, they realize how much money that they're losing. Guess what? I think they're going to change their tune. And that's what you got to watch out for.
Well, I want to point out another hypocrisy with the Democrat Party. You know, the DEI party. They just elected one a devil. I mean, what I'm saying, that in their eyes is a white male as the head of the DNC, and the second in position is a white male of the Democratic National Committee.
Are you
Now,
talking about Mr. Hoag there?
yeah, the second one.
All
Yeah.
right. Yeah,
And
so
their first guy, that I would expect, wouldn't expect it to be a white male to lead their party. I mean, you know, but that's what they did on both positions.
I would, because they think that the American voters voted for Donald Trump because he's white. So therefore,
it's not just that. It's what Trump talked about and what he supported over the years. They could put a guy with four different colors on his face. It's not going to help them. It's their policies. It's their thinking. It's their ideology. It is so beyond what the average hardworking, decent, now I got to put in legal, citizen cares about. They're tone deaf to it. Absolutely. It just, again, I'll mention that rally they had last night with Maxine Dirty Waters and Schmuck Schumer. People are laughing at this. Who are they talking about? Well, President Trump has done more in the first 2 weeks of his administration than Biden did in his last 4 years.
Well, I like his Schumer at the grill there. Schumer at the grill with raw hamburgers, right? The grill isn't even on.
Yeah. I mean, if he didn't have $24 million in his war chest every time. His last opponent was Joe. He's on Newsmax all the time.
Yeah.
Pipion, or I'm forgetting his name.
I forget, and I'm from New York.
So. Yeah. Well, you always forget the challengers. He did such, if you could find it on YouTube, the debate of Chuck Schumer in his last election 2 years ago. He was in a debate, and Joe, if it was a big major fight, they would have stopped it in the second round. He did so well against Schumer. And again, Republicans didn't support him. And he lost in New York by only 10%, where it's usually a lopsided landslide for Schumer.
10% is 5% plus one, right? So you can't say that he lost by 10%. He lost by 5% plus one vote. Because you know how it is. It's like a zero-sum game. And especially with a lot of these things, the voter turnout is so low.
And what he did, he pointed out all the hypocrisies, and he hit a grand slam when Schumer was talking about how mean Trump is, and he's calling for violence. And he said, Senator Schumer, why were you out in the street tearing apart our Supreme Court nominee? We're going to get you. We're going to get you. And then the next day, there was a guy with an AK-47 in front of the Chief Justice's house.
Right.
He says, you have no premise to talk about meanness and calling for violence.
Yeah, it was Joe Pinion was his.
Pinion. I was close. I said Pinion or something. And he looked that up. I showed it at our meeting. That's how good that debate was. And I pointed out all the great things that Pinion did. He just went for the jugular. And Schumer at times couldn't even talk. He couldn't give a rejoinder. He was beside himself. And accolades to Pinion. He did a phenomenal. Anybody that's in debate, no matter what your ideology is, view that debate. That's how you take on a popular opponent. And he did piece by piece. Excellent.
Yeah, I looked it up here. And he was elected in 2022, reelected.
Yeah.
So it's actually not even that much here. Hold on. Boom. Okay. So it was, all right. Chuck Schumer, 3,200,000 votes. I'm using round numbers. Mm-hmm. Joe Pinion, 22.4 million votes. So you're talking 800,000 votes.
With no help. No help from the feds. No help from the state committee. He did it by getting out there and talking to the people. And the people that heard him loved him. The only bad thing, he had to be off TV for a while. But now he's back on. Right, but now, I can't implore enough of how to debate a popular incumbent. And if he had a little bit of help from the feds and the state, that would have been even closer or a possible win. if he had the means to get his message out.
Now, let's talk about Chuck Schumer, because this is how did he get this kind of following? I understand political payoffs and everything, but what does he do every Sunday? Do you recall? He does a certain thing. And Rush Limbaugh used to talk about this. Sunday is a slow news day for politics. Mm-hmm. So what happens is if there's anything bad news that happens on the left, when do they report on it? They report on it afternoon on a Friday, after 12 noon on a Friday. And why is that? All of the Sunday programs are filmed Friday morning. Mm-hmm. They're all being edited Friday afternoon, and they're all rendered Friday afternoon, 5 o'clock. So they're not going to, everybody's already away for the weekend. And if it's a 3-day weekend, forget about it. They're all out of the office at 12 noon. All right. And this stuff is filmed on Thursday. So what ends up happening is Sunday is a slow news day on the political end. They may be, you have the Sunday morning shows and everything else, and he's going to watch them and everything else. And then around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're getting ready for the 5 p.m. broadcast, right? Or the, after the football or baseball games or whatever it is, right? And there's Chuck Schumer. He has a news conference every Sunday afternoon, and he has a complete monopoly, and he's good with the sound bites. Whoever is his writer now, right, probably very good with the sound bites, and that's what he holds. And what goes on the news every Sunday afternoon is what? Chuck Schumer.
And what you were talking about, when we had physical newspapers, the least bought paper was a Saturday.
Right.
If you watch Schumer in the well, always, without fail, 110%, he has to read off. Nothing comes from the heart. Nothing comes extemporaneously. He's totally programmed, not in a good way.
Right.
And that's where Pinion got him, too, because he couldn't play that game with him. He would just throw back to him some of the dastardly things he has done or hasn't done for the people.
Well, I think Pinion's issue was that he had a problem figuring out what to say. There were so many bad things.
Yeah. In fact, they had to cut him off a few times.
Right. And what ended up happening with the you mentioned newspapers. Tomorrow is a historical day in the state of New Jersey, and we know why that is. It's the last day of the Star Ledger tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was today, but this is it. Last Sunday was last Sunday edition for that.
Yeah. It's probably going to be a big sale for them because people are going to buy it for historical. It might be worth something finally one day. But the sad thing about that, I was no fan of the Star Ledger, but I was a big fan of Paul Molsheim. He was a very good guy. And where Paul's going to go now, he's come to our meetings and spoke.
Yeah,
where he's going to be now, I don't know. I'd like to know, because he was a good conservative voice on that liberal rag. And he's very talented, very, very smart.
Yeah. Paul and I have had some disagreements over the years, but not none that I'll share on here.
When you have somebody that can speak somewhat conservative on the Star Ledger, you got to point it out.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Paul, 99% of the time, he's great. Mm-hmm. A lot of his stuff, it's just a difference of opinion. Now, that's all. You and I don't agree on everything, but, mm-hmm. Okay, well, guess what? It's a difference of opinion. You're much too liberal for me, Paul, to be honest.
I don't know about that. It's one thing I'm never usually called. But like Koch used to say, if you agree with me 80%, that's very good.
And if you agree with me 100%, you're nuts.
See a psychiatrist.
Exactly. But now that you don't, even though you didn't get necessarily favorable coverage from Star Ledger, that's now going to be NJ.com. Right. Mm-hmm. I believe they're maintaining their affiliation with NJ.com. What are we do here? And I don't want to hear social media, to be honest with you. Yeah, that's for people who are 50 years old and younger, or people like my wife, who I'm not going to mention how old she is and younger, right? They get most of their news from social media and from the Alphabet networks here. They're, what do you do? I tell you what, now I have a Rumble channel where this is going up on Rumble. I mean, the Rumble channel is wonderful, the app here, but I don't see people 55 years and older going on those apps or going on social media with that and spreading the word. I mean, it's an excuse. My old business partner used to call it the approach avoidance complex, you know?
Well, yeah, it's hard to reach them where they're probably going to have to rely on things like Fox and Newsmax, but there's a couple of good conservative blogs out there. If you want to know what the enemy's doing, and I check them out every day, Insider New Jersey. That's right. That's how I found out what the other side's doing. But David Wald's, his blog's very good. Right. Matt Rooney, his is good. SaveNJ.com. And you're going to have to rely on some of these conservative blogs and some of the shows like Newsmax and Fox.
And Safety Force.
Yes, absolutely.
We got to get you on here. We got to get you with a regular segment. We got to work on that.
Okay.
Yeah. We got to work on that with your own.
Because a lot of times my own party, they talk about toleration. That's what they do with me. They really don't like to hear the truth. In New Jersey, it's basically an ivory tower type Republican Party. And it's changing. Yeah. Well, thanks to the vote count that Trump got. We had in the 9th district, Billy Frump, who it was a rib rock Democrat district. He almost won. I mean, there was no way it should have been like 35-68 or something. And I think it was 40-44. And now the establishment wants to run a better known person. That's what they did with me when I almost won in 90. But what was worse, they changed the district.
Yes.
And it was the Republican plan that changed the district. So my own party, after all the work I did, killed my district.
Well, here we have New Jersey's 9th district was Nellie Poe is now the congressperson. And then Billy Parent was her opponent, and he lost 50-45.9, basically a little bit under 13,000 votes he lost by.
That's unheard of. That was Parcells' district, rest his soul.
Right.
A very liberal, radical leftist, very popular machine Democrat district. And that just shows how people are tired. That's in New Jersey.
Well, you talk about a gerrymandered district. This includes, just for the listeners here, Fort Lee, that area, along the coast, not the main part of Fort Lee, along the coast, down to Hudson County. And then Hudson County is carved out there. That used to be Menendez's old district, And then it goes from there all the way through the urban center, Patterson, and then it ends up by me in Oakland, New Jersey.
Yeah, I think this is a
ridiculous, and it goes down to East Orange. This is a ridiculously shaped, like Limbaugh used to call it, the Bullwinkle district out west. They had one. This is like the same thing. This looks like the Cat in the Hat district to me, but
not to take anything away from Billy. He did work hard.
Oh, yeah.
The only advice I would give Billy, he was in the Air Force.
Right.
He had to wear the uniform, dressed appropriately. And I would just tell Billy, you want to be a congressman, wear your suits, have your hair done right. And I think that could be a little bit of a turnoff and that little edge he would need to win this thing. Mm-hmm. But, I say what's on my mind. I never held back. But maybe one day him and I will get to talk because he's a very, very talented young man and excellent on the issues. And I would hate to see that an appearance that he has might turn some people off. He's too good to have that happen to him.
Oh, with me, I did all my door to door in a pair of work boots. I got comments on that, but I have foot problems. I had foot problems in those
Yeah.
days.
Well, what if you're going for Congress, you got to look the part. I'm not saying you have to go door to door in a suit and tie, but you have to look like a Congress. You can't have like a ponytail going halfway down your back. That doesn't work.
It's with that. So what do we what else I wanted to talk so basically that's the whole thing is and I had mentioned this to our a couple of our mutual associates, right? In Woodridge Township, the mayor McCormick has for years, and he up until recently he cut back on it, right? Was that everybody got a mailer every a quarter or so to on what the Democratic Party was doing. It was a free magazine. And he'd go around and everything else. And I had made the suggestion to some people that the Republican Party needs to do that. Is just have, it doesn't have to be anything too fancy, just a newsletter. Now it's easier than ever because you can get things online and everything else, just to hand to people. Where you have the you work through the Republican committee in town. Every neighborhood is supposed to have their own Republican man and woman. Were they'll do that. They're your point person, and you have a voter education list. I'm sorry, a voter registration list. You know who the Republicans are. Just go around to your own Republicans, do a mailing to them, and you don't even have to do all of them. If you can do a mailing to maybe 10% of them. And you got to find the right 10% and coordinate things. So they're the ones who are going to go out there and who are going to do what you need to be done on that. And it's just get out to vote. I think person to person, as we become more and more impersonal with the internet, I think that there is a place for the personal touch on things. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I don't know how they get away with that because that they still periodically send out this magazine, and all it does is highlight the mayor and his council, what they're doing. And of course, it's a biased presentation. And what he does now, we have this thing in our town, and the towns have it for emergencies. Like last night, it was supposed to be icy roads. So you get on this emergency broadcast and say, just be careful. Tomorrow we're expecting icy roads. We're going to do our best to make the streets safe. So I just want you to be aware between midnight to 11 a.m. tomorrow. Be careful on the roads. What he uses that for now, instead of putting out these periodic programs, he highlights different organizations what are doing something, whether it's a fundraiser or looking for members or this and that. Mind you, it's supposed to be used for emergencies. And at the end, he says a stupid joke. Maybe I'll tell you one when I complete this thought. And people went to the council meeting and said that, Mayor, this is supposed to be, this was given to us, a federal program to use it for emergencies. He goes, well, all these groups I mentioned, the girls are doing, the cheerleaders are doing a car wash, the Elks are doing this or that. Oh, they love it because they get publicity and people go to their events. Well, that's cute, but that's not what it was made for. And at the end, he'll say, I'm trying to think of some of the, he does these 30
The dad
second.
joke is what he, my mom used to laugh about it too. The dad joke.
His, well, my dopey friend, my dopey friend, he was cold the other night. He couldn't sleep, so he crawled over to the fireplace and slept like a log. It's just stupid. That's how he ends it, with a dumb joke. But I don't listen to most of what he's talking about until I listen to those jokes at the end, because they're so insane. And that's why I think people like it, because they're not funny, they're stupid. But that's how he's doing it now. He's taking the emergency broadcast and using it to highlight different clubs and organizations, which that endears them to him. See how they do it? And
And
he'll, yeah.
yeah, So you mentioned the DEI stuff. Let me point out something. And of course, my program, we go over. And the one thing I have to say negative about Trump is that we're not getting the press releases from the agencies like we were 3 weeks ago. Maybe that'll change once things get settled. But we used to, no, and I read the press release. I used to read the press releases. And on, let me pull it up here from the Department of Labor. Press release. It was in November. I believe it was November 13th. Here, let me pull this up here. I'm a one-man show here, Paul. You know, this is what we got to deal with here. It came to my the fire chief in LA. Listening to her, she is probably the only one that knows what's going on, regardless of what her situation is. But everybody else is, they have zero experience in public safety or fire or the fire service. No, you're not gonna, public safety, that's and public policy, right? You can be, so you have an idea of what goes on in the fire service and the fire commission. Here, these folks have no idea what's going on, and they embargoed all their meetings here with this. So this is from U.S. Department, this is from November 13, 2024. So Biden was still in there, and this is from the U.S. Department of Labor. The U.S. Department of Labor today published a guide designed to educate employers about the benefits of using skills-first hiring practices and encourage them to use those practices to build a better, more qualified workforce. All right. And again, it was like a, here we go. That was taken off. Boy, Trump is killing a lot of these. A lot of these were removed here. With this, but this goes to show you, and I can look back at the at what this was, the Skills First Hiring Kit. It was like a shot across the bow of the whole DEI initiative here. And I think what it is we don't understand what DEI is, to be to be honest with you, with all this stuff. But here we had the kit saying that you should be hiring qualified people. This is what came out from the Department of Labor, and you don't hear a peep out of anyone with anything, right? So even the Biden administration realized that there was a problem with DEI, is how I'm interpreting this, with this. And, again, nobody criticized them on this, on the left. Very, very,
nobody on the right in some cases.
Put this, save this, the whole kit here from the Employment and Training Administration from the U.S. Department of Labor. And it's all about hiring the right people for the job, regardless of what they are. I mean, DEI, by the way, I went through the whole training program for DEI. I actually took an academic course because the Republicans were not, I said something is not right here. The Republicans are not describing this right or criticizing this right, I think, and they're using sound bites, and the Democrats are taking this in a different direction. But I think DEI, well, really in its core, it's not a bad thing, where it's along the lines of you're not going to go and use people's situation against them, and you want to hire the best person for this. I don't think anybody out there is going to be against that. Yeah, hire the best person for the job, whatever that is. And if you're discluding whole communities as a business owner, that's not really a smart thing to do with that. But what happens is the Democrats went overboard with the program, right, and made it what it is. Everything that you mentioned is true. But on the other hand, the Republicans don't take the time to learn what this stuff is, so they could go and actually give a definitive explanation why this is not a good thing. And this has been my problem from day one here, is educating our own electorate, which I mentioned at the beginning. We don't do that on the Republican side. We do not educate our own electorate here with this. Very frustrating. At the beginning of his career, Limbaugh was good up until about 2009, 2010, when he stopped doing that. educating people. And that's when, no, I don't know what happened. These people get threatened. These people get, you know, canceled out. Producers come out and everything else.
Sponsors. But you know what?
You know, the whole thing.
In today's atmosphere, you mentioned I had interviewed these two, and Bob Grant, I considered a friend.
Right.
You could never in this day and age go on YouTube and listen to some of Bob Grant's programs, and you'll know why he was so popular. But the way he handled people and all, and the names he gave, the monikers, you couldn't do that today. And even Rush, I don't know if his show could be done today. You'd have to do it on a podcast.
Well,
Nick DiPaolo does something like that, but he's on a podcast. He would never get on ABC, NBC.
Who is that? Like Napolitano?
Nick DiPaolo. He's a comedian that's conservative. Very funny. A little salty for me, but he's not afraid to take on the woke, politically incorrect people. And
The thing is,
couldn't do it today. And it's a shame. If you watch the old Dean Martin roast, you couldn't do them either. He would get Don Rickles going up there, and he would say something not mean spirited, but something like a stereotype. We lost our sense of we become too darn sensitive. Everybody's up in a rage if you say one thing about the wrong person, and that's a shame, because that type of humor was entertaining, and we can't do it. It wasn't mean-spirited.
Well, you mentioned that.
I'm a fair opportunity criticizer.
Well, you know what? What you say is right. There used to be an old-time comedian back in the 70s and 60s. I think he died in 79. Gene Tracy. Mm-hmm. Right, and I tell you what, you can't, even for the 70s, it was bad. All right. But I every once in a while I would turn him on, and you know why I found him very funny? He used to make fun of cleft lip, cleft palate kids, people, mm-hmm. hair lip people, and that's what I am. And I find those jokes even today. I laugh like it, and I found, you know, I have that, and I find them hysterical. Mm-hmm. A lot of these things, and because it's true, a lot of this stuff is that your face. Not so much anymore. I get a little bit, but back in the day, it was absolutely 100% true.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.